Information that makes a difference. You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes.
And a very good Friday morning to you. Into our final hour on this 18th day of May. Since it is Friday, we will have our list of five things to do this weekend in Hancock County. One of the things going on this weekend, of course, is the royal wedding. Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle will walk down the aisle. It is a significantly more low-key event than some other ceremonies are when it comes to royal weddings, that is. I mean, it's still a big deal, but it's much more low-key. We'll talk a little bit about what we can expect the big day and why it is such a big deal for so many people. That is coming up here a little bit later on in the hour as well. One of the things, we did this last year and had a lot of fun with it, so we're bringing it back this year, our summer book club. Every week we will try and feature a new book, a new author, something that you want to add to your summer reading list. Some of it would be a lot of good beach reads, and then some other, more serious thought-provoking stuff. It's a great novel. It's a great story, but it also kind of ties into one of the hot button issues of the day, that being immigration. And, want to kind of set the scene here. The, year is 1844 in this book, with the nation of Ireland on the eve of the Great Hunger, as they called it, or what is sometimes referenced in history books as the Great Potato Famine, which would last for 5 years. Of course, they didn't know that it would be 5 years, but I mean, this was a big deal at the time. And a young man in that nation sees America as his escape from this humanitarian disaster, this coming disaster. But the city of New York in itself is also a dangerous place, as he soon learns in the new novel by Roger Higgins. It is called Billy Gogan American. And Roger Higgins, author, is with us on the line. So in the story, Billy Gogan is actually left orphaned when his father dies in prison. This great famine is coming across his native country, and he is pretty much all alone here.
He is orphaned. His mother clearly no longer living when the book opens.
Mm-hmm.
His father dies under mysterious circumstances, having worked for a fellow named McConnell, Daniel McConnell, who was the leader for Irish independence during the early 19th century. And he had led the repeal year of 1843, which was a failed attempt to free Ireland from the English yoke. And the English, the Sassenach, put O'Connell in prison, and along with putting O'Connell in prison, they put Billy's father in prison. And as history will record, O'Connell was eventually freed, but unfortunately Billy's father dies under rather mysterious circumstances in Richmond Jail, just outside of Dublin.
And with that development, and as we mentioned, the Great Hunger in Ireland, it's time to go. It's time to find a new place, and America is seen as that new place. But again, in this era, New York, I mean, folks may remember the film Gangs of New York. I mean, that's the kind of environment he's going into. So not exactly the great streets lined with gold image.
Absolutely not. The Five Points is a fascinating neighborhood, America's first great slum.
Mm-hmm.
It built around a spring that fed a brewery that became known as the Old Brewery, just northeast of City Hall. You can sort of walk there, not see very much today because it's all tall buildings and streets, but over the years, that place developed. The brewery went out of business in the 1830s. And so by the time Billy shows up in the very early days of January of 1845, in the middle of the winter in a snowstorm, the old brewery held hundreds, if not thousands, of people living there in a decrepit old industrial building the roof was falling in. There was no plumbing, no heating, no sanitation at all.
Yeah.
And you can only begin to imagine how frightful the living conditions must have been.
And at this point, Billy is how old when he encounters this new reality?
He's about 16 years old.
So,
you know, he's 15, 16. He's a little on the young side to be thrown on, thrown out on his own devices.
Even by the standards of the day. So you can imagine.
Yeah. He'd led a very sheltered life up until that point. Perhaps even a very privileged life. And suddenly, his cousin, Seamus O'Cray, heartlessly throws him out, gives him just enough money to buy a one-way ticket from Cork, Ireland, to New York. And that's all he's got on him. I mean, he's destitute.
Yeah.
Just like every other Irish immigrant of the era, or almost every other one.
And obviously, that is the overarching theme of immigration. It kind of resonates with some of what we are hearing now. And obviously, we're talking about a different era. We're talking about a different group of people that are in the spotlight now. But there are some parallels to be drawn here, are there not?
I think that's exactly right. And I started writing this book about 9 years ago. And, clearly the border wall was not even a figment of the president's imagination at that point.
Right.
But the whole idea of immigration and, you know, who's an American, these are enduring themes in U.S. history. They were as important in the 1840s as they are today. Who gets to be an American? And I thought about that long and hard because I'm an immigrant myself. I came to this country, albeit on a Boeing 707 in an aisle economy seat. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you know, I did go through that when I was a child about thinking about what does it mean to be an American. And I grew up, worked very hard at becoming American. Grew up, became a naval officer for many years and have become a lawyer, but these are thoughts that have always stuck with me over the years, and I really wanted to spend some time talking about that in this first book.
And with respect to that, with all of that in mind, what's the takeaway here in the book? What do you hope that people get from the story?
That the past is never really past. We keep revisiting these themes. And to understand, you know, I think first and foremost, enjoy the story as an adventure story.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly that. But also to walk away and perhaps think a little bit about why America is the way it is today. And that's a theme that I'm going to be exploring in the sequel, which is due out in November, called Billy Gogan Gone for Soldier, where Billy finds himself an enlisted man in the U.S. Army as it's getting ready to start fighting the Mexican-American War. And these are, and again, there'll be a whole new set of themes there.
Mm-hmm.
They're touched on a little bit in Billy Gogan American, the annexation of Texas, what it means to be Mexican versus American.
Mm-hmm.
And these are themes that, that continue on.
And a bit of life imitating art, given that your military background as well. So you see a little bit of yourself.
That book was kind of fun to write because I have two sons who have served in the Marines. One still is a currently serving Marine Corps captain. The other was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, now a police officer. And I one of them enlisted, one of them an officer, and I drew on my own experiences, and I think some of the stories that my sons have told me and we've shared over the years to inform this second book. And, I really had fun writing that one.
The first one is out now, Billy Gogan American, and I was reading some of the reviews. One of the blurbs calls Billy Gogan the central character, a character in the mold of Huck Finn and David Copperfield. One that you will be rooting for. That's pretty high praise right there.
I thank whoever wrote that. I don't remember who it was, but, anytime you can get mentioned with those two characters, I'm humble.
It is Billy Gogan American. Roger Higgins is the author. And do you have a website in conjunction with the book we can guide folks to?
Absolutely. It's billygogan.com. And there's a number of articles there that we've put up. There's some links to some television shows about the era, particularly about the Mexican-American War. So the readers, anybody who's generally interested, can learn a little bit more about the history of the time.
Roger, thanks very much for taking the time, and certainly best of luck with this book and with the forthcoming sequel.
Well, thank you very much.
Historical fiction from author Roger Higgins, Billy Gogan, American. We'll put that on our summer reading list, and you can learn more at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. 18 past the hour now as Good Mornings continues. Our list of five things to do this weekend in Hancock County is coming up. The 143rd running of the Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore is this weekend. Second leg in the Triple Crown. Whereas the Kentucky Derby is the run for the roses, this is the run for the Black-Eyed Susans. And Derby winner Justify is the favorite at 1-3 as of right now. Good Magic is 3-1. And everybody else, all the other horses, are at least double digits to 1. The long shot Lone Sailor is at 28-1. And it is the second oldest racetrack in the country, behind Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York, Pimlico. So, a lot of history there. That is coming up this weekend. What are you doing this weekend?
Get into a car and drive to the other side.
If you are looking to step out on the town, do something this weekend. I know how it is. You sit around, you know, kind of looking at each other. I want to do something this weekend, but what is there to do? We have a list. Here are just a sampling of five things to do this weekend in Hancock County. And this is by no means an exhaustive list, but just five of them that we pulled out. One of the big things happening this weekend, of course, Armed Forces Day celebration this weekend at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. I drove by the fairgrounds the other day. I had forgotten that it was the Armed Forces Day celebration. And I drove by the fairgrounds the other day and I said, why is there a missile sitting in the front of the fairgrounds? I'm wondering, what is the fair board up to? They've got a missile there. Part of the gathering. So it's this weekend at the Hancock County Fairgrounds, the largest annual military show in Ohio, with military vehicles, flight demonstrations, living history, entertainment, a memorabilia, swap meet, and more. $5 for adults, $3 for kids, and that is today and tomorrow, 7 to 9. So it's going on right now, as a matter of fact, and then Sunday, 7 to noon. You can check that out this weekend. Item number two on our list, classic movie night tonight at the Hancock Historical Museum. This month's feature film, same time next year, starring Alan Alda and Ellen Burstyn. So a modern-day classic movie night tonight. 7 p.m., that is free. Item number three on our list, the Spring Disc Golf Tournament at Riverbend tomorrow. Registration at 9 in the morning, play begins at 10. Cost is $20, and I think it's two rounds involved, right? So it's a pretty good deal. All ages are welcome, but children must be accompanied by a participating adult. And a couple of other events. The annual Millstream Woodcarvers Show is tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. That'll be over at their workshop, the Millstream Woodcarvers Workshop, on Blanchard Avenue. The actual address is 2230 Blanchard Avenue. They'll have on display assorted wood carvings and pyrography, I think is how you pronounce it. It's where they do pictures with wood burning. It's really amazing stuff, and it is free admission for that, the annual Millstream Woodcarvers Show, 10 to 5 tomorrow. And then item number five, the Millstream Astronomy Club is hosting a program called Astronomy Around the Globe. That is tomorrow evening at Riverbend. Begins at 9 p.m., that's when the program is, and then afterward, weather permitting, they'll do some stargazing. And that is a free event as well, happening tomorrow evening over at Riverbend. That is just, like we said, a small sampling of all there is to do. There are many, many other events going on. The Color Me Happy Walk for NAMI and 5K. That is going on, and some other things, too. We've got more information on all of the happenings this weekend at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. We have a link for the five things to do this weekend in Hancock County from the Visit Findlay calendar. And then the community events link has even more stuff. So if you're looking for something to do, no reason to just sit around and be bored. One of the other things going on this weekend, albeit not in Hancock County, the royal wedding. Talk about why that is such a big deal for so many people and what to expect. The big day tomorrow for royal watchers, that is coming up next.
WFIN is now broadcasting on FM2. We've expanded our reach to provide you our programming 24 hours a day, including all of our sports play-by-play coverage. 1330 WFIN, and now at 95.5 FM.
We were talking about the five things to do this weekend in Hancock County. One other big thing happening this weekend, not in Hancock County, of course, the royal wedding. Royal watchers always get excited for an event like this. But this time, there is added interest because the bride is an American. An American actress, no less. So, pretty exciting stuff. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle will tie the knot at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle tomorrow. And for weeks now, you've probably seen and heard interviews about Meghan and Harry, their lives, what we can expect from them when they finally get married. Earlier this week, ABC's Sherry Preston sat down with British royal expert Imogene Lloyd-Webber for a little more insight into what we can expect on the big day.
The royal wedding is this week. We sat down with Imogene Lloyd-Webber for a little more insight into what we can look for on the big day.
Yeah. Why is a royal wedding such a big deal?
A royal wedding is a big deal because at the end of the day, the royal family are the most famous family in the world. They're also historically consequential, but they're also a family, so we all relate to them. It's like watching Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey is essentially an upmarket soap opera, but because it's upmarket, you don't feel guilty about watching it. Looking at the royals, you don't feel guilty about watching the royal family because they're also part of history. They're figureheads to 2 billion people across the world. So therefore, you're allowed to watch.
The wedding of Harry and Meghan, how will it be different from what we saw with William and Catherine and what we saw with Charles and Diana?
Big difference with Harry and Meghan's wedding is that it's not a state occasion. It's not in London. It's in Windsor. It's St. George's Chapel, which is the sort of family church, as it were. It's a lot smaller. There are no politicians there. William is the future King of England, so therefore his wedding was a state occasion. It was held at Westminster Abbey. Charles, future King of England, so his wedding to Diana was held at St. Paul's Cathedral. Foreign dignitaries were absolutely both the weddings of William and Kate and Charles and Diana won't be seeing foreign dignitaries at sort of a much smaller intimate wedding in Windsor. Also, the crowd size. It's estimated by the Metropolitan Police that there are over 1 million people lining the route for William and Kate's wedding and 500,000 people more outside Buckingham Palace. The moment estimates for Harry and Meghan's wedding is that there'll be about 100,000 people in Windsor. Totally different level of expectation because at the end of the day, Prince Harry is sixth in line to the throne. He's just been bumped down by little Prince Louis.
So if we see fewer people and it's not a big a deal, what about the people who will be there? We won't have heads of state, but who will we have?
On some levels, this is a more fun wedding for us royal watchers to cover, for people to tune into, because we're going to see more celebrities. There aren't going to be sort of politicians or foreign dignitaries. We are likely to see Spice Girls. We're likely to see Elton John. We're also likely to see Meghan's Suits cast. She, of course, was with that show for 7 seasons, over 100 episodes. So we'll see, hopefully, Gabriel Macht, Abigail Spencer, Gina Torres, and so forth.
When you have a couple that does get to make more decisions kind of about what they're crafting their wedding, what they want it to be, still, it's going to be in St. George's Chapel of Windsor Castle. It's not like it's going to be at the church down the street. What differences will we see as far as music is concerned, as far as, you know, what we might see flowers-wise, and just the whole decorum of the day?
Meghan and Harry have more leeway than Kate and William do on smaller details. For instance, just down to the wedding cake, they've gone for an elderflower and lemon concoction. And William and Kate very much had the traditional fruit cake. William had his own bride groom's cake because he loves this special chocolate cake. But no, Meghan and Harry have gone for a wedding cake done by a California chef who she'd actually featured on her website, The Tig.
Okay, how about the designer of the dress? I mean, that's gone down, you know, it's down to the wire. We're all waiting to see. Name a couple of designers who we think might be the ones who are picked.
So going back to Queen Victoria, there's a tradition that the royal family, the women in the royal family, wear British, or certainly somebody with British connections. We therefore expecting Meghan to pick a British designer or somebody who is based in Britain. Names being banded around include Ralph and Russo, who did that gorgeous whimsical engagement gown that she wore in those photographs. Sarah Burton for Alexander McQueen has been mentioned again, although of course she did Kate's wedding dress. Christopher Bailey of Burberry. Roland Murray is a good friend of Meghan's. They met in an elevator. He of course is based in London. So we shall see who she picks. But perhaps sort of the best fact about the wedding dress, when you think about it, Harry is going to be the last person in the world to see the wedding dress. Perhaps very fitting.
What about the relationship between Meghan and Harry? It really is something quite different. I mean, for the royal family itself, when you think of, you know, marrying for love is something really relatively new to a royal family.
Three out of four of the Queen's children got divorced. The only ones who remain married are Edward and Sophie. The Queen is very close to them both. It's therefore no surprise the royal family recognised that something was going wrong in terms of marital relationships. So both Harry and William have been able to marry for love.
And the Queen and Prince Philip really married for love. It might not have seemed like it at the time, but what a strong bond that they've had over all these years.
The Queen and Prince Philip did marry for love. The Queen was convinced that he was the one, even though he had a very, very tricky family background. His sisters weren't allowed to attend the wedding in 1947 because they'd married Germans, and there were Nazi connections there. Prince Philip and the Queen have absolutely made a success of it.
And the Queen herself, how close is she with William and Harry?
The Queen is very close to William and Harry. She very much trusts her grandsons. And you can see that by the level of responsibility she's giving to them. William, certainly on the ceremonial level. Harry, she's put front and centre of the Commonwealth. He's just got a great big new position in the Commonwealth. He's going to be travelling around the Commonwealth with Meghan. You have to remember that Queen is a figurehead to 2 billion people. That's a third of the world. But she doesn't do long-haul travel anymore. So she's going to depend on William and Harry and Meghan and Kate to do that for her.
One thing people are going to miss is the kiss from the Buckingham Palace balcony. I mean, are we going to see a kiss? You know, I know they go down the long walk and they'll be in the Ascot carriage, but are we going to see like a nice big kiss shot?
We absolutely will get a kiss shot, probably on the steps of St. George's Chapel underneath the Sabre Arch. I'm sure probably in the carriage as well. Meghan and Harry, unlike most members of the royal family, do PDA, so I think it's highly liable that they'll be having a little bit of a kiss in the carriage as well.
I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Yeah, public displays of affection, not all that uncommon for Prince Harry, unlike some of the royals. So kind of interesting, royal family for a new millennium there. Here's the thing. Americans here on this side of the pond will have no trouble finding the royal wedding playing on a screen near you tomorrow in the wee hours. The real difficulty will be avoiding it if you are one of those who are not into weddings or not into the royals or both. They say more than 2 billion people around the world watched the wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton at Westminster Abbey in London a few years back. That according to the British wedding planning app Bridebook. I saw that in USA Today. Here's the deal. ABC TV has 5 hours of live coverage beginning at 5 a.m. Tomorrow from Windsor. But the best coverage, if you want to check it out, is probably on the BBC America cable channel. They will air the wedding live as a direct simulcast of BBC One's coverage in the UK. So it's almost like being there. The same broadcast that the Brits would be watching starting at 4:15 in the morning. And if you would like to see the wedding, but you don't want to get up that early, they will present an encore presentation of the wedding on BBC America at 10 p.m. tomorrow. So there you go. That's how you can check it out or how you can avoid it if you so choose. Wee hours of the morning with the time difference. Best of luck to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle tomorrow. Like we said, because she's an American, there's a little bit of added interest there. get a final check of the weather forecast for the upcoming weekend coming up next as Good Mornings continues. Friday, you took your own sweet time getting here. Oh, I tell you what, we have had some beautiful days this week. Unfortunately, the weekend looks like it's going to be rather soggy. I know, it's not what you wanted to hear, right? First Alert Forecast, WTOL 11 meteorologist Chris Vickers. We'll start off with some sunshine this morning, but a chance of showers developing in the afternoon. And here's the other thing. We really don't need the rain. I mean, I look at my yard, and it's greened up just fine. Thank you very much. I can't keep up with it at this point. It's growing so much. So a little bit of, you know, a nice stretch of warm, dry weather would be welcome at this point. High today in the upper 60s, so not quite as warm as it has been this week as well. Some evening showers possible, low in the upper 50s tonight, and then tomorrow and Sunday, clouds, scattered showers, and thunderstorms. Look for a high in the mid to upper 70s for both Saturday and Sunday, and actually on into Monday as well. Could see some showers and storms. Partly sunny and upper 70s on Tuesday, so we begin to dry out through the bulk of next week, and the early returns for Memorial Day weekend next weekend are that we may be in for more soggy weather, probably, well, at least on Friday. The extended forecast, and again, this is, we're talking about next weekend now, maybe some rain on Friday of next week, but then low to maybe mid-80s for next Saturday and Sunday. Maybe some rain on Saturday, but the bulk of your Memorial Day weekend should be dry. So if you're going to have one wet weekend, probably better this weekend than next, I suppose. Right now, we are at 59 degrees in the Flag City, 1330 WFIN, 95.5 FM. Let's find out what's going on around the rest of the country if you are traveling today.
Thunderstorms and heavy rain along with damaging winds are likely today from South Dakota and Nebraska through Kansas and Oklahoma. Speaking of rain, there's been a lot of it in the east this week, and more is on the way today from Pennsylvania and Ohio and New Jersey in the north through Tennessee, the Carolinas, into Florida, and flooding is a concern for many areas in the east today. Part of the central Appalachians have dealt with a lot of rainfall this week, so flooding a big concern there. The Delmarva, too, may see some flooding during the day today. I'm Mike Ellis.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program today and throughout the week. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about on our webpage, goodmornings.net. And if you miss anything from the show, either today or from the past couple of weeks, we've got the archive on the webpage. You can go back and catch up on what you missed. Listen anytime, stream the show from the website, or download and listen whenever you like in podcast form. It is posted there just as soon as the program is over, and Good Mornings doesn't have to be just for the morning anymore. What is that, the old orange juice slogan? It's not just for breakfast anymore. Again, goodmornings.net. Coming up on Monday, this has been one of the big stories that we're talking about in political circles this week. It has been now a full year since Special Counsel Robert Mueller began investigating interference in the 2016 presidential election. And to put the news of the day into context, it's important to understand the complex history of Donald Trump's Russian connections even before he became a candidate. I know it is a very politically charged issue, but we'll talk a little bit about the backstory and try and do it without a lot of the political chargings. And that'll be Monday morning. Until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day and a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.